Anatar. So like a buyer, I'm going to start with a bit of Locus Classicus. So from the section of the way. All things whatsoever are devoid of unchanging selfhood. Sabbe dharma anatar. When one sees this with insight, one becomes weary of suffering. This is the way to purity. So we're all very familiar with this territory, the teaching of anatta, no self. It's a real keystone of the basic Buddhism that we've all been reared on. Everything in conditioned existence is a constant arising and coming apart in dependence on conditions. There's nothing fixed and unchanging anywhere. No thing, no one. All is shunyata. We tell people, sorry, there's no eternal soul, there's no God, not in Buddhism. There's nothing to get hold of anywhere, find security in, find refuge in. Sorry, that's the way it is. Of course, whilst we're clear there's no fixed, unchanging self, we also recognise the provisional, pragmatic, ever-changing self, the continuity of being that we all have to work with. So no doubt, we've all smiled when we came across Banti describing his discomfort at hearing Christmas Humphreys talk of hacking off great bleeding chunks of self. And we've smiled too when we've heard Banti insist that before we could think of getting rid of a self, we had to have a self to get rid of. And all those teachings on individuality, becoming a true individual, taking responsibility for our actions and life, cultivating qualities such as friendliness, kindness, generosity, honesty, openness, truthfulness, fidelity, gratitude, forgiveness, creativity, and so on. Such teachings have all become second nature to us. And of course, we all use the language of selfhood all the time. Me, mine, myself, my meditation, my spiritual life, my spiritual progress. And as we follow the path, observe others also on the path, we become aware of strange paradoxes. The more someone seems to be able to practice kindness, friendliness, giving of themselves, the more they're able to engage in open-hearted connection with others, the more unselfish they seem to be. At the same time, we have a sense in them of a bigger, more expansive self, a more distinctive individual. So we find ourselves in this interesting position. On the one hand, recognising the need for real clarity and rigour in our understanding and application of this central teaching of anatta. So through study, discussion, really trying to get to roots with this teaching. Grips with this teaching, and really going on to explore it through practices like the six element practice, reflecting on the nidanas, reflection on verses perhaps we find built into our sadhana practice, the whole drama of the sadhana practice, really trying to bring this teaching alive in our own experience. And then at the same time being quite pragmatic in the way that we work with the teaching, avoiding getting too hard-headed, dogmatic, ensuring that our explorations are imbued with metta, shraddha, kindness, a deep sense of our own and others' humanity. So once I started reading around and preparing this talk on anatta, after a while it actually quite quickly became clear this would be the theme of the talk. The importance of taking up working with the teaching of anatta in the right spirit, if it's really going to work for us, be an effective tool of transformation, and not become one of those water snakes that the Buddha warned us not to grab by the tail if we want to avoid being bitten. So the rest of this talk is a brief exploration of the theme by looking at the unfoldment of Buddhist teachings around the self in the Buddhist tradition, notably with the help of Edward Conza and his Buddhist thought in India, and paying particular attention to the Pudgalavadins. They were a very significant school in Indian Buddhism, who Conza calls the personalists, so called because of the central importance of their beliefs, in their beliefs, around the Pudgala, the person. Abhaya mentioned the idea of one way of trying to get to grips with the teaching is to disprove it. So I thought at least I'd drop in to the pot some ideas from the Buddhist tradition that at least encourage us to look a bit more deeply at this teaching of anatta. So the Pudgala, the self, the person, is often mentioned in the Buddhist scriptures, is incontestable, it's there again and again. And the Pudgalavadins are particularly fond of this quote from the Anguttara Nikaya, the chapter of the Wands. Monks, there is one person whose arising in the world is for the welfare of the multitude, for the happiness of the multitude, who comes out of compassion for the world, for the good welfare and happiness of devas and humans. Who is that one person? It is the Tathagata, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. This is that one person. Monks, there is one person arising in the world who is unique, without a peer, without counterpart, incomparable, unequalled, matchless, unrivaled, the best of humans. Who is that one person? It is the Tathagata, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. This is that one person. Monks, the manifestation of one person is the manifestation of great vision, of great light, of great radiance. It is the manifestation of the six things unsurpassed, the realization of the four analytical knowledges, the penetration of the various elements, of the diversity of elements. It is the realization of the fruit of knowledge and liberation, the realization of the fruits of stream entry, once returning, non-returning, and arahantship. Who is that one person? It is the Tathagata, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. This is that one person. And also in the next, actually immediately following passage, it says, it's impossible, O monks, and it cannot be that a person possessed of right view should regard anything as a self. But it is possible for an uninstructed worldling to regard something as self. So the Pudgalavadins definitely maintained the teaching of anatta. They remained in the Buddhist fold, though many other Buddhists weren't quite comfortable with them. Just on the term Pudgala or Pugala, we chanted it this morning in the Tiratnavanda, the stream entrance, once returners, non-returners, arahats of the path and the fruit. They're the eight persons, the Atta Purisa Pugala, the transcendental persons who we chant about every day. So the debate between the Pudgalavadins and the Orthodox wasn't about the authenticity of these passages, but the significance of the term Pudgala. The Orthodox insisted that if the self is a fiction, how can you have a person without a self? The person, they insisted, the Pudgala, belongs to the conventional, not the ultimate reality, Paramata. The Pudgalavadins, however, held that the Pudgala is a reality in the ultimate sense and can be an object of true experience. They argued that it's the Pudgala that provides continuity over many lives, and it's this same Pudgala, this same person at the end, that is totally transformed as the Tathagata, hence that passage, which they insist clearly supports this. They held that the Pudgala is neither identical with the Skandhas, nor is it in the Skandhas, nor outside of the Skandhas. The Pudgala can't be conditioned, because then it would only have a momentary existence, and couldn't exist as an abiding substratum of a succession of momentary dharmas, nor can the Pudgala be unconditioned, because then he would be inactive and couldn't do anything. The Pudgala is in a category all by himself, indefinable in every respect. Questions as to whether the Pudgala, the person, is permanent, impermanent, one or many, all these, as far as the Pudgalavadins are concerned, belong in the category of indetermined questions. A man's true transcendental self is so subtle that only the Buddhas can see it. Clever stuff, eh? So, if you want to know more about the Pudgalavadins' ideas, a good place to start is Khonsa's Buddhist Thought in India. Also, there's a very interesting discussion around the Pudgalavadins and these sort of views in a seminar extract at the back of the first of those Mitratal magazines on the Noble Eightfold Path, on right view. And in that, the course of that discussion, Bhante mentions a leading contemporary Pali scholar, a bhikshu in Sri Lanka, who actually realised he was a Pudgalavadin on the basis of his own impartial studies. Yeah, just in passing, there's some real treasures in those seminar extracts, you know, those old mitratars and seminars that you know, we're sitting on. One gets the impression they're not often looked at these days, but you know, Padmavajra pointed to it to me. There's some real thought-provoking material in those seminars and extracts. So, the Pudgalavadins. We're all familiar with the explanation of how the Mahayana arose as a response to a narrowing of the Buddhist tradition around rigid, literal understanding of the Abhidharma and the accompanying narrow, self-centered approach to the Dharma and the spiritual life that seemed to go with that. And Khonsa suggests that the Pudgalavadins, the school was actually founded about 200 years after the Parinibbana of Buddha Shakyamuni. Khonsa suggests that it might represent a reaction to already the one-sided philosophizing of the Abhidharmists and their hard-edged, literal-minded insistence that there's no self. No self exists. And the Pudgalavadin school persisted as a major thread in Buddhism through much of its history in India. In the 7th century, the Chinese pilgrim Xuanzong reported that of 224,000 Buddhist monks he came across in India, 66,000, which is over a quarter of them, were Pudgalavadins. You know, they were in that Pudgalavadin camp. Khonsa also suggests that not just the Pudgalavadins, but also later doctrines such as the Alaya, the Tathagata Garbha, Buddha Nature, that they're all attempts to combine the doctrine of no self, as it were, remain true to this central teaching of Anatta, with this almost instinctive belief in a self, empirical or true. There's something deep in our nature and in our spiritual explorations also that needs to be addressed. Khonsa also speculates whether the strong attraction of such doctrines as Tathagata Garbha, Buddha Nature and so on, for many Western disciples of Buddhism, whether this grows out of the strong emphasis on individualism found in Western culture, or alternatively out of deep-seated attitudes that run on connected to Christian beliefs in an eternal soul and so on. So the jury, I think, is still out on that one. Yeah, just in passing, I mean, I do really like that word soul. You know, it's so much more soulful, meaningful, rich, alive than words like self, person, individual. You know, there's it is that other dimension again, I think, that Konza points to, that you know, there's something in us that actually, yes, whilst wanting to be true to, if you like, the rigour of the Buddhist teachings, also wants to be true to our humanity, something deep within us. So to return to the central theme and sum up, you know, as so often, the Buddhist path seems to involve working with paradoxes. On the one hand, yes, this clear, rigorous understanding of teachings like anatta, and this exploration of it through study, discussion, through contemplation of Pratichasamutpada, the 24 Nidanas, practices like the six element practice. I've deliberately not gone far down that road in terms of how these contemplations open up into insight, because that's the territory of Ratnaprabha's talk. On the other hand, you know, as well as this rigorous exploration of the teachings, we have to work on ourselves. Bhante spoke once of a modern Hindu teacher who spoke of cooking the self, and I quite like that idea. You know, it's like the idea of you know, this like hard, raw potato of selfhood that we need to cook and soften, you know, soften around the edges. The metaphor, you can only really go so far with it, you know. You end up really sort of getting cooked down into this great cosmic potato soup. But yes, this idea of sort of cooking, softening, ripening, maturing, expanding ourself, an expansion into metta, kindness, so that there's this interpenetration with the worlds of others and with life around us. So our whole understanding of anatta then needs to be clear, rigorous, precise, but it also needs to be imbued with friendliness, kindness, shraddha. And only then, I suspect, can the teaching unfold within us to reveal its truest and deepest meaning.